You're listening to Sustainable from AgriBusiness Global, covering the crop protection, biologicals, and plant health markets' advancements towards creating a healthier planet.
Welcome to Sustainable. My name is Renee Targus. I'm the editor of AgriBusiness Global and your host for today's podcast. We'll be speaking to Thomas Laurent, the chief executive officer for MicroPep, a company based out of the United States and France, developing crop protection solutions based on micropeptides. Thomas has been on the road talking to investors and growers, the European Union and the United States, finding out what the market looks like for biopesticides in the coming months. Welcome to the podcast, Thomas.
Good morning, Renee.
All right, well, we'll just kind of jump into it. So you were on the road talking to these investors and growers, and what were some of the top three conversations you had, and what did you learn?
So to me, I think three main takeaways from the past few months would be, and the first one I think might be obvious to everyone, but it's really the impact of climate change, the way growers are farming and what we are seeing in the field. So it has also had a big impact for own activities. So we are running field trials, of course, to position our products. And this season has been kind of extraordinary. But the thing is, it's been a few years since we're saying it's extraordinary in terms of climate, that it's becoming the new normal. To give you examples, so we're running trials in potato and grapes in Europe and the US, and also soybean in Latin America in parallel. We had some places with a lot of disease pressure, really coming from a combination of drought and high temperature, but also heavy rainfall. So a lot of humidity really surging at the moment. And so we've seen like very heavy disease pressure, especially in grapes, in potato, in Belgium. So seeing that really climate and like big change in the climate environment generally has a big impact on farmers, but also for companies like us developing products. So to me, that's kind of a first key takeaway, but unfortunately, we've seen that more and more often. So there's a big question, I think, for everybody is how the future is going to look like with this impact of climate change for crop production. But that's a first one, and it's really obvious and striking to us. The second one, I think, we've seen a lot of those resistance and regulatory impact on the toolbox that farmers have. To give you an example on resistance, we've been running trials in California on grapes. And, you know, you expect when you do those trials, you always compare it with chemical standards and other biologicals, of course. But Trialis partner and the growers there were surprised to see that the chemical program was not at all performing to what was expected. And that's also surprising because, of course, you have this picture of having the chemical product always performing very, very well in all situations. But we see that in the field, and we know that there's a resistance going on and that exists. But we have our data showing that, yes, in fact, in some occasions, that's not always the case in every country or fields. But in some cases, the chemical standards are not performing anymore. So that's one worry, I think, for growers around the world. Of course, there's differences between crops and geography. But resistance is definitely there, not only for disease, but also weeds and insects. So we see that from the field. And the second aspect linked to that is also the regulatory environment. We're running trials, potato, grapes, Europe. There's a big pressure in Europe for growers, also in this case of high disease coming on, because some key chemicals have been banned. So mancozeb is one example. It's still in use in the US and Latin America, but it's of course under scrutiny. And there, because of this high disease coming from the impact of the climate as well, farmers are left without many options. So they're putting more and more sulfur, which is not always a good response depending on their crops and rotation. But yeah, so resistance and regulatory is having a big impact. And today, I think farmers see that their toolbox is really shrinking. And that's why they need new solutions coming on to help either replace or at least offset a bit of the chemicals we're using. And it's a big issue. And I think, strangely, last week, we had in the same week kind of the announcement that Bayer was going to be accountable for $1.5 billion on the Monsanto lawsuit for Roundup. And at the same time in Europe, the Europe approved glyphosate for 10 more years. So there's definitely a proof somewhere that we don't have the answer yet to replacing those chemicals. So yeah, innovation is still needed there.
Yeah, you brought up the whole EU and glyphosate. That kind of shocked everyone in as far as what was going on there. But yeah, definitely. And I think you're talking about the weed resistance, the pesticide resistance. I share that a lot. And I think also the issues of not getting new formulations to market fast enough So I just have a follow-up question with you on that. You know, as a company that creates new formulations, how difficult is it to get these products to market, and which market, you know, you're talking about Latin America and the EU, the United States, where do you see these new products being offered the quickest?
So, you know, we started a company in France, so I wish I could say that France was going to be the first market and so on, but that's definitely not the case. And rightly pointed out that regulatory has a big impact on the way you want to push and develop those products. The situation today for biopesticides, generally speaking, is that, and for every type of product, you go through different phases. You first have to file a submission, a dossier, and you can more or less file more or less the same dossier for different geographies, so US, Latin America, and Europe. And then you have the reviewing period. So you file everything, you're fine, and then you have to interact with different bodies to get the approval. And so the reviewing period is very, very different between countries. So Latin America, Brazil could be 18 months, maybe 24. US is definitely around 20, 24 months at EPA. Europe is more 40, 45 months reviewing period. So even if you do the same job, you're good in your data package, you submit the beautiful dossier, just the reviewing period in Europe is just twice longer than in other geographies. And I think that's a bit a shame. And that's also one of the reasons why we are looking at other geographies first in terms of market access. And of course, attacking Europe, but that will definitely come later because of regulatory.
What about, you know, some of the regions that you didn't talk about, and I know that they have a lower cost and they also have a shorter, you know, a regulatory review period, are Southeast Asia and China. Is your company looking east at all?
Not at the moment, mostly because of the product positioning. So we're not working so much on crops that are of big interest or big markets in Southeast Asia. And it's also lack of resources. You know, it's still, we are about 50 employees. So having all three continents to kind of manage is already a big thing for us. But definitely, there's probably a lot of potential in Southeast Asia. So that will be for the future.
Right. All right. Let me go back to, you know, your tour and kind of what you were finding out there. So, you know, you talked about the challenges that the growers were facing as far as weed resistance and then the climate and what was happening about there. You talked about how their toolbox is shrinking, but what solutions are being offered to them that you were observing?
So I think there's, of course, a big trend towards new active ingredients based on biology, so biologicals. What I think is very exciting to us and I think for this industry is the emergence of biochemistry. So it's typically a new category of compounds that are not living microbes, which today is a big bulk of the biological portfolio, but based on natural chemicals like proteins, RNA, peptides, smaller peptides like we do, and things like that. I think this space, this technological space, has a huge potential for ag. It's, you know, technology that has been used also in cosmetics, pharmaceuticals industries. We know the potential, we know the mode of action. And there are companies like us, we're not the only one, but we're trying to push this new category of active ingredients in the market, trying to adapt the science from pharma to make it compatible with the farmer's budget, because it's a very different industry, so you cannot replicate exactly the same recipe. So making sure those technologies are affordable for farmers. And this is where we spend a lot of time at MicroPep. But I think there's a strong driver for that. And hopefully, if we go through the challenges we mentioned, regulatory, but also go to market access. So partnering is also going to be an important factor, I think, to get those new active ingredients in the hands of farmers down the road. But I'm hopeful with that. There's been quite significant investment in the startup ecosystem and financing new solutions. It's still a long process. Again, ag is also seasons dependent. So it's a more slowly moving. You need to be patient to see what are the results from your field trials, but it's getting there.
I hear a lot about that. You know, you were talking to investors and a lot of times investors don't understand that, especially if they invest in the biological sector of the market, that there is a waiting period before you see a return on investment. So, you know, you were talking about the active ingredients that you want to get. Are you talking about like synthetic chemicals?
So, yeah. So in what we call biochemistry, so protein, peptides, RNA are typically molecules that can be produced naturally, naturally occurring, you know, on Earth. So that's very different from, let's say, a completely artificial molecule that we designed to bind to a specific target, which is the basis of the commercial chemicals. And those have a better regulatory profile. They can be degraded more rapidly in the environment, so you don't have residues on the crops or the fruits. There's no issues with runoff waters. So they have a better and safer safety profile. But what is interesting as well is because it's a specific molecule compared to a living microbe, we have a better understanding of what it's doing, how it's doing its activity. And that's where you can also optimize and improve efficacy and have a better positioning of those biochemical active ingredients. So they combine kind of the best of both worlds, the commercial chemicals with the target and the mode of action, but also the safety profile and the sustainability profile of biologicals, other biologicals.
So are you seeing a future for that in row crops then? You know, I know that Brazil uses biologicals in row crops, and then the U.S. is actually starting to do that as well, but there's still that efficacy issue. Are you thinking this is the future for row crops in the U.S. and onward?
I do think so. I think the most important thing is we're working on cost, and that's what we've been doing at MicroPep, is we paying attention from the very beginning about what it will take to be able to launch a product on row crops. So we're working on soybean, for example, in Latin America. And there's a combination of factors there. Of course, you need the efficacy that is providing a good return for the growers so that you can have this product in a program. But more than that, or on par with that, you have the dose, the use rate. So if you need like 10 kilograms per acre, that's one thing. If you need a few grams per acre, that's a totally different economic perspective. And second, of course, is the cost of manufacturing of these new biochemicals. And it's really finding the sweet spot in terms of cost so that you can provide those active at a cost that makes sense for a grower that is not spending that much money on fungicide or herbicide in row crops. I think we're in the past to get there, definitely, with MicroPep. Other companies are also working around that. It's, I think, probably a limiting factor today for biologicals could come from the cost. That's why most companies go for high-value crops. It seems to be easier. The barriers to entry are, of course, lower to go for, I don't know, strawberries, grapes, or fruits and veg. But if you really don't want to make a volume impact or a big impact, we need to find the right economics to go for row crops. I think we have a path to that. But that's also interesting because talking to investors, that's definitely also a key selling point at the moment for what we're doing at MicroPep. There's much more focus today, I think, on the basics economics. So fundraising in that, the current context is not very good for fundraising, generally speaking. We've seen big companies also in our space announcing restructuring like AgBio. So investors are paying much more attention to the basic economic equations for the farmers, but also for companies, so how much you spend to get how much return. And so, yeah, you need to get your numbers right.
You know, there's a lot of corporations, a lot of the bigger players acquiring these biological companies, and they're showing interest. Are they showing interest in micropeptides? What do you think the interest is going to be for that specific product for 2024?
Yeah, so definitely. So we already have a strong partnership with FMC on a research project. We're working with other companies on other topics that, you know, it's still under conversations. But of course, the big companies are watching that space very closely and looking at what type of new technology could complement their portfolio and would make sense for them to either license in or maybe in the future acquire. I think there's a lot of strong drivers for this biochemical space that I mentioned, proteins, peptides, like RNA even. One argument is that they could be combined more or less easily with conventionals. So it's not like we want to replace everything from one day to the other, but also the mixing aspect, the mixability is a strong selling point. So in that sense, you can see those big companies looking at that as a new space that would make sense in their portfolio. Now, I think the challenge we face, and I'm probably talking also for other entrepreneurs in that space, is our industry is still learning how to work with startups. I think the pharmaceutical industry has done that decades ago, and I think ag is learning how to maybe offset some of the research to startups and then transfer that research into the big companies. But we don't have yet the code or the playbook to do that fast. So there's still, you know, learnings about how big companies are working, same for companies to understand how startups are thinking the world, and it's not yet a streamlined process. To give one practical example, we all use stage gates in the way you push a product to the next phase. Stage gates are not all the same in all companies. There's some subtleties, but we don't always speak the same language like they have in pharma. Like I have a phase one product or a phase two drugs. You kind of know what it is. Today, there's no clear definition of what would be the phase one of a biological. And that will help everybody to know, oh, then if I reach that phase, I can put a price on what it is. So there's still, yeah, some work to do, I think, collectively within the industry about that.
Is there any association or anyone championing that you see so far in the industry?
Not so much. Talked about it with some entrepreneur, investors, and big companies alike. And I think that will make common sense, but it's probably a gigantic work to, okay, try to align everybody under the same definition. The challenge also with biology is, I heard that a lot, it depends. So, and because of the field trials, maybe it's the way to develop product is not exactly the same, of course, than in human therapeutics. But I feel we'll benefit all from, speaking the same language, knowing what it takes to bring the product to a phase where a big company could say, okay, now I can take it over and push it to regulatory maybe. So we're still discovering that. And I think that's going to evolve. I mean, it's part of the industry maturing, generally speaking.
Based on your conversations, so what do you think the biologicals market is going to look like in 2024? And if you want to talk specifically to micropeptides, that's fine. But, you know, we were talking more like about biopesticides. What do you think that market's going to look like in 2024 for Latin America, the US, and then the EU?
I think, first of all, from maybe a startup perspective, there's going to be some downrun or restructuring of some companies. So I think some players will probably disappear, the asset being acquired because of the financial market, generally speaking. There's going to be some still money invested in the early stage because the tickets are smaller. So we see maybe new companies with new science coming on. But that still will be far away from the farmer's gates at this point. But I think from really an ag perspective for farmers, I believe we see more and more biochemical products, as I mentioned. So other companies have got recent approval on peptide technology. We should see hopefully approval from the EPA about RNA or other proteins soon. So I think 2024 will hopefully be a moment where we see more of those, you know, new technologies coming out. And hopefully more partnership between smaller companies and big companies. The situation for big companies is not the best one either, frankly speaking. So I'm not sure about the downside impact on partnership. But, you know, I'm an entrepreneur, so I'm always optimistic. But, I think hopefully next year is going to be interesting to watch for, more partnership, seeing new launches of products based on biochemicals. We'll see that.
You brought up an interesting point about, you know, a lot of the bigger players not doing well in 2023, and there was the oversupply in the market and a lot of other challenging factors. Do you think, you know, you said that there was going to be some biological companies possibly disappearing, That seems to be the case, though, a lot of the times. There's a lot of startups, and they just don't have the business savvy to keep their company going or get their product to market. Do you think it's going to be a tough year in 2024 then for biological companies as well, or do you think there'll still be some
business? Yeah, it could be. I think today the conversation we have are much more about EBITDA margin than the science. And I think the challenge with ag in particular is also the go-to-market. It's a very fragmented market. So you cannot sell your product the same way to a California grape grower, to a soybean farmer in Latin America, or a potato grower in Belgium. So different, you know, channels, different mindset. And for companies, smaller companies that are going direct, selling their own products, that can be a challenge if they don't have the financial backing to do that. And sometimes some companies have raised a lot of capital to initiate that. But if you don't have the sales and then the EBITDA margin that's proving that the model is sustainable, that can be a challenge in that specific financing environment. I would say a few months ago, you could raise the next round more or less easily. Today, that's less the case. So that's, I think, why we see some of the big companies that have raised a lot, either being a significant down round where the valuation is really going down, or for, in some cases, maybe restructuring. So I think, yeah, there's going to be kind of sanity check, going back to the fundamentals of the economics. We'll see how that goes.
So do you have any like two tips of advice for listeners who are looking at 2024 with kind of anxious, a little anxiety? Any tips for them?
I would say it depends on the category. I would say, I think early stage, you know, entrepreneur, I think there's still good flow of money going there. So let's go and do it and go fast. I think that's definitely a good moment to continue doing this. Being in mind the economics at the end of the day. And in our industry, those economics are not easy. That's something to understand. But having the economics in mind, and then the rest will follow.
All right.
I don't know if that's really optimist, but
that's the way it is
today.
Realism. Yeah. The realism will come through. So thank you, Thomas, so much for talking with us today. I really enjoy the conversation. It's very educational, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Sustainable from Agribusiness Global. You can find more podcasts, videos, news, e-newsletters, event and webinar information at agribusinessglobal.com.